Hello again, still with us here in studio are Roisin Garvey, Green Party Senator, Cian O'Callaghan, Social Democrats TD for Dublin Bay North, and Breed Smith, People Before Profit TD for Dublin South Central, and also Louise Byrne, political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mirror. Eamon Ryan and Swiss senior citizens, how did they end up in conflict in the European Court of Human Rights, Louise?
Yeah, this is Eamon Ryan versus the Swiss grannies, and this has really taken off actually in the last couple of days or so. Eamon Ryan coming in for some sharp criticism. So this is a group of Swiss women aged 65 and over, hence the tag, the Swiss grannies. And they filed a case in the European Court of Human Rights arguing that the Swiss government had not taken enough action on climate change and that this violated their health rights. Now, it transpired through a parliamentary question from the Social Democrats, Jennifer Whitmore, that Eamon Ryan had sought an intervention in this case, but not on the side of the Swiss grannies, actually on the side of the Swiss government. So, you know, you would imagine him being the environment minister, him being the Green Party leader, that he would have been supporting the grannies. However, it seems he was not. Now, he's come under sharp criticism for that, but the official answer and the answer coming from Eamon Ryan's team and Eamon Ryan's officials and his spokespeople is that this was advice that was received from the Attorney General, and the advice was to intervene, and so Eamon Ryan acted on that. But shifting the blame to the Attorney General, not really taking the heat away from Eamon Ryan on this one.
All right. Roisin Garvey, what's your understanding of the point of contention here? Eamon Ryan, as Louise outlined there, ends up on the side of the Swiss government intervening in the European Court of Human Rights, although he said on the Dáil Record he's not against clarifying what the law is in principle.
Yeah, I suppose what happened here was a badly answered PQ from the department, which has led into this thing. Like, Eamon Ryan hates Swiss grannies and hates people taking people to court around climate issues. Like, the intervention was to ensure that governments, elected people, are in charge or have the onus on them to deal with the climate targets, and that it shouldn't be just left to campaigners and NGOs. And, you know, I think Eamon Ryan has a great track record in supporting NGOs and being involved in one himself for many years. I think he's one of the few politicians in Ireland who publicly recognised the significance of this case as well. The overall thing is that we don't want it to turn into a big litigious thing in every country, that it all goes to courts and it's solicitors and barristers making loads of money. We want the governments themselves to step up to the mark to meet the requirements of the Paris agreements, because we are in serious trouble. And the Attorney General requested the department to intervene in this to ensure that in future that we wouldn't be leaving it, wouldn't be leaving to the ordinary people to have to go to court, because that's not going to work. We have to, as politicians, we have to be the ones that have to deliver.
OK. Cian O'Callaghan, do you accept the bona fides, I suppose, of Eamon Ryan's position? Because, as I say, in that Dáil answer, he said that the government does support the clarification of the relevant principles under international law, and pointed to supporting a UN General Assembly resolution in March 2023, which sought an advisory opinion from the International Court of Justice. So is it Eamon Ryan versus the Swiss grannies, or is it Eamon Ryan on behalf of the Swiss grannies and more, in your view?
No, I think it's a really bizarre intervention by Eamon Ryan. I think the justification for it is really bizarre as well. Look, the reason these cases are being taken is because governments are failing to meet their climate change targets. Now, what's really strange about this is Eamon leads a party where a lot of their senior members for years have been taking court cases with respect to the Irish state and other organisations to make sure that we meet our climate targets and our environmental objectives. I was in the Housing Committee last week with Minister Malcolm Noonan, one of the Green Party ministers, and he was telling us about how he'd been involved in court cases over the years on environmental issues. This is part of the green movement. It's part of a lot of the Green Party representatives. It's what they've been doing for decades, in fact. So to have the leader and the minister actually coming in on the side against citizens who would much prefer not to be taking cases like this, I have no doubt about this, but they obviously feel compelled to do that.
So just to clarify, he wasn't coming in against the citizens, he was coming in to ensure that governments would be left responsible for this. It wouldn't be left to citizens to have to go to court.
Governments are responsible. They wouldn't need to go to court if governments were meeting their climate action targets.
So just I perhaps the distinction is lost on me. So this group, which is Verein Klima Senior in Schweiz, these senior citizens from Switzerland, took this case to hold the Swiss government accountable. So in their holding their government to account, how does it help the cause of holding governments to account to do the job of climate protection if Eamon Ryan is intervening in the case against the Swiss government? Roisin Garvey, do you want to?
Look, I suppose I think that if the Attorney General has decided that this is what needs to happen, the Minister Eamon Ryan, being a good government politician, will do what he has asked of the AG. The AG is the one we take guidance from all the time on these things.
Who's running the government, the ministers or the Attorney General?
Yeah, but I think I see the point. What they were trying to do here was to make sure that in cases like this, that it is clear that we don't want it to be left to just court cases to solve our climate targets, that the onus has to be put on governments. And the ECHR ruling agreed with that position and made it clearer.
But let's be very clear about the role of the Attorney General. They give legal advice to the government. They don't direct the government as what to do. So if Minister Eamon Ryan wants...
It's actually the Department of Foreign Affairs and the AG that attended the court
but
case.
But if Minister Eamon Ryan or any of the ministers want legal advice, they go to the Attorney General, they get legal advice. Legal advice usually gives them options, says you can do X, Y and Z. Now, you don't publish the advice, so we don't know what's in it. But the Attorney General doesn't direct ministers to take cases. That's not how it's worked. The ministers decide on this.
All right, I want to bring Breed Smith in on
this. The intervention, sorry, was to ensure that governments elected people rather than the courts, which should decide what steps should be taken to ensure states do their job.
That doesn't make sense.
I just want to clarify that. Yeah. This is a government being held to account by citizens through the European Court of Human Rights. How does that avoid a government taking responsibility?
But the intervention wasn't saying the grannies were wrong.
It was trying to obstruct what the grannies were attempting to do, which was to hold the government to account for their health being threatened by the lack of the climate emission targets being reached.
So
that would have had implications for the Irish state as well, because we've fallen well short of our emissions targets. And if we could say, my health has been affected, I'm the same age as a lot of those women.
Yeah.
My health has been affected because of my gender and because of my age and because of the air I breathe in. I could similarly take a case, and people my age could take a case against Eamon Ryan, the Green Minister, for failing to reach the targets. And by the way, he says, I don't believe we should deal with climate through litigation. But yet his biggest boast is that under his leadership as Green Party Minister, we introduced a climate law for the first time ever. So he sees the law and climate as being intrinsically linked.
No.
But here he tried to stop a group
of
senior
citizens.
Yeah, but
the climate law puts the onus on the government and the different departments. It doesn't put the onus on the ordinary people to have to find money to take governments to court.
But the
stitched into the Climate Act is a clause to ensure that people will have the right to take the government to court.
Which is what the women did in the case of Switzerland.
Yeah, but
which is what the women in Switzerland did, but Eamon Ryan tries to stop that happening. And he's the only government that made an intervention.
He tried to ensure it wouldn't be left to NGOs and ordinary people to do the work when we need to do the work.
Seriously, Roisin, don't swallow that. He went in there to stop the litigation.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll have a bit more points of clarity on this when we see, if we can see, the written observations and oral observations that were made on behalf of the state and whether there's any nuance between them. We'll come back to that maybe on another programme. But in terms of what's at stake, Louise, the Copernicus report was out on climate change in 2023 and fatal consequences resulting from climate change, it outlined.
Yeah, really, really grim reading from that report yesterday. And it was saying that Europe suffered a huge number of climate extremes on the continent as we were hit by heat waves, wildfires, droughts, flooding, kind of a little bit of everything, really. But it spoke, I think, one thing that a lot of people are looking at was the number of heat-related deaths, and that is on the rise in Europe. And heat-related deaths have increased to 94% of European regions over the last two decades. There were 63 lives lost to storms last year, 44 to floods and 44 to wildfires. So really frightening people, frightening situations and really real impacts on people. And, you know, we often sometimes think of climate change as this kind of far away and this abstract thing. But when you see the impact that climate change is having and when it's actually taking people's lives, I think that really should snap people into action and realise that this is not some abstract far away thing. It's happening, and it's happening in Europe, and it's rather scary.
Yeah, in the Copernicus report, Roisin Garvey, close to home. It says in June, this is June 2023, the Atlantic Ocean west of Ireland and around the United Kingdom was impacted by a marine heat wave that was classified as extreme and in some areas beyond extreme, with sea surface temperatures as much as 5 degrees above average, which, you know, is not just a warmer dip in the ocean. It also means far stronger storms off the coasts.
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, I hope it hits home to lots of people. I mean, I suppose the reason I'm involved in the Green Party is because 20 or 30 years ago, this was all foreseen. I remember having Professor John Sweeney down to meet a bunch of farmers down in Clare 22 years ago, and he was saying all these things were going to come true. And now we've reached a point where we don't even know what's going to happen next, because we've gone past 1.5 degrees. And I suppose this is one of the main reasons I've been in the Green Party, because their policies were the strongest on taking action around climate. And I think that I'm hoping this report actually in some ways frightens people into action, because for too long it's been kind of boxed off as a green issue. It's a health issue, it's a transport issue, it's a fuel issue, it's a just transition issue. You know, it affects everybody in every way, and it's going to more and more.
Cian O'Callaghan, the statistic on heat-related mortality, it's gone up almost by a third. It says by around 30% in the past 20 years. And as Louise said there, heat-related deaths have gone up in nearly all areas of Europe, 94% of them. So it's for anyone who thinks it's not a real live issue, the Copernicus report would beg to differ.
Yeah, it does. So for anyone who thinks that this is simply about, you know, how it affects, you know, wildlife and our broader environment, and absolutely it does, but it has an absolute detrimental effect on humans and our health, and it's having that effect now, not something in the future. And I think it shows that we need to really up our game in terms of climate action. I think a lot of the approach that's been taken to date, I think, has actually been mistaken. It's been divisive. There's been a kind of blame and shame individuals for not doing enough, whereas we haven't been focusing enough on what we can be doing as a country that's really, really effective. You know, investing much more into public transport, renewable energy, doing things.
We've invested more in public transport in the last 4 years than we are nowhere near where we need
mm-hmm. to be in terms of making the sustainable transition that we need to 100%
make. 100%
agree with you. Is the tone of the debate part of the problem, that it's put in terms of urban versus rural, woke versus whatever you're having yourself, that it rarely touches on some of the issues that have been highlighted in the Copernicus report?
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. It's been divisive. It's actually played into the hands of people who are resistant to us acting on climate change. There's been too much measures that makes it really difficult for people on low incomes, you know, when actually the focus needs to be on much bigger actions. For example, 11% of our carbon emissions are from building and construction. And only just a few weeks ago, I and others were proposing amendments in our planning bill saying that there should be limits on carbon budgets for construction. Government, of course, voted these down. There's other countries in Europe that already have these in place. That's 11% of our carbon emissions, and the government won't get on with it and start. You know, we could be using low carbon concrete, for example, but there's no requirement in Ireland to do that. It's not more costly than the high carbon concrete that's used. There's so many different things that could be done.
Breedsmith, the debate is it part of the issue that it has very much become, particularly on the urban versus rural end of things, or the idea that it's farmers versus the environmentalists, is been a particular fear about the upcoming election for the European Parliament, that it's pitting one side against the other, when there may well be areas where collaboration is possible.
Well, there's a great slogan that the Fridays for Future young people have in the climate movement, and that is system change, not climate change. And the measures that we have seen under our climate law and across Europe have been about penalising individuals and trying to blame individual behaviour rather than looking at the behaviour of the fossil fuel industry and its related industries like arms and petroleum and plastics and all the rest of it. And governments need to come together and do something about it. But the interesting thing is, 2 days before the Copernicus report was published, the strategic priority list for the European Union leaders was debated, and climate, nature and environment have fallen off that priority list entirely. They're not on it for the next 5 years. Now, what does that say about leadership?
Well, I think somebody quipped to Politico that it was bullets, not bees, made on the agenda. But Roisin Garvey, apparently the European Commission insists that the the green agenda hasn't fallen off. It's just maybe not being debated in political circles. So I suppose we're back to the standard of the debate and the standard of information that's been put into the public domain.
Yeah, I mean, I do worry about the debate in the public domain. I think it's been very divisive. I don't buy into the farmers versus environmentalists. A lot of farmers are environmentalists. A lot of environmentalists are farmers. In Clare, I remember canvassing 1,000 rural houses. Two gave me grief about being green. Most of the farmers were saying, we don't see the birds. We don't know what to do about silage. Our land is flooded more than ever before. We've had 9 storms in the last 4 months. So I rather an intelligent debate about it. I don't think it has done great to have certain people going on about it as if we're all out to ruin rural Ireland.
I suppose, is a debate around the just transition issue one of the problems? So,
well, when you reduce the cost of public transport, that is a good just transition issue. When you try and retrofit social housing, we've had thousands of social housing finally now after years of social housing stock being absolutely abysmal, you know, energy rating G and damp and mould. I've lived in one of them myself. You know, now we're getting them to A1 energy. I've visited lots of social housing in Clare alone. I'm sure if they're doing it in Clare, there are other places. Warm houses with energy ratings of A1, which reduces the cost of running the house. We have 1,000 households a week waking up to warmer homes because of the retrofit. And it's not just social housing. You have the squeezed middle as well with these, I think it's 100 houses every day putting solar panels on the roofs thanks to Grant and VAT. I do think, like, with 12 TDs and 4 senators, compared to what we'd like to get would be a lot more than this. But considering that, we have done very well.
Louise Byrne, what do you make of how, I suppose, on point the debate is and whether it actually addresses some of the issues, some of the fairly stark issues that we saw in the Copernicus report?
I think, unfortunately, what the Green Party, a lot of the time, what they're saying is correct, and they're raising the correct measures and they're looking at doing the correct things. It can wind people up the wrong way. And I mean, for example, when you mention public transport, Roisin, I mean, that's all well and good for me in Dublin if I want to get on the train any other weekend in the Maybank holiday weekend when I want to go to Crow Park. But anyway, that's fine. Like, there's loads of public transport options for me. I know you're building up in rural Ireland, but like, there's not the level of public transport that is needed. And when people hear the Green Party talking about public transport, they're like, yeah, that's grand if you live in the city, but what about me living in the sticks? I need my car, I need my van, I need my truck, whatever it is.
But we've put a new rural bus service every single week, 52 new bus services every week for the last 2 years.
How many villages are there though in the country?
We have seen buses going to places that haven't seen a bus in 70 years, and like, the feedback is amazing.
All right.
We have gone from between 700% to 1,500% increase in rural transport, and people are very happy about that.
And that's really welcome. But I mean, it does feel, I think, and see, when you speak to people and when you speak about the just transition, I think the unfortunate thing is a lot of people with the just transition is meant to be bringing everyone along, but a lot of people just feel completely and utterly left out of that conversation, and that's a shame.
All right, Cian O'Colin, we've just been through a major cost of living crisis. The last thing perhaps people want to hear is efforts to nudge them away from the use of fossil fuels through the likes of a carbon tax. No matter how much, what way a carbon tax is going to be reinvested, they see, as a result of events elsewhere in the world, the price of petrol and diesel at the pump going up. It's hard to convince people that, you know, that they can do any more.
Yeah, and the evidence is that taxes that penalise people actually don't change behaviour, because people who use a car, it's out of necessity generally. So you have to have really good, viable alternatives for people. And actually, some of this is around, you know, things like planning as well, because we still have a situation that if you want to, for example, if you want to own a home and you live in the Dublin area, chances are that, because most new built homes in Dublin aren't available for someone to buy, chances are then your options are, well, I have to maybe move out to commuter belt, I have to move out to an area where public transport isn't as good, where there's going to be car dependency. So if we're not getting these things right, you know, planning well, giving people options in terms of being able to buy, making sure that there is really good public transport, then we're really fighting over, can someone who's really struggling to get by afford an increase, you know, in transport costs or in heating costs? And that is not the way that we're going to bring people with us. So it has to be much more holistic, has to get away from this divisive stuff. Exactly. I think the points around farmers are really well made. I mean, farmers are living you know, are absolutely on the front line in terms of the environment. It's farmers who will often be telling you in terms of biodiversity, the changes that have happened. And you know, so this kind of narrative of, you know, city versus rural areas, I don't
very briefly, because I want to get to our last topic on housing, and it's going to just require
just
a bit of explanation.
Yeah, back to my original point. We need to be, you know, bringing about a just transition by extracting from those who are responsible for the global warming, the fossil fuel industry in particular, and its related industries like plastic and arms and others. We need to be taxing their profits and using those resources to bring about a just transition so that we can pay the farmers properly to just transition, so that we can pay workers when they lose their jobs, so that we can fuel the homes that need to be fueled properly and retrofitted properly, and bring in the public transport. It needs to come from those who are systemically responsible, not from individuals. And if you keep saying you change your behaviour and do nothing to those at the top, then people are going to
be. Okay,
that's the measures that are being brought in. Have you brought in a single tax on the profits of the fossil fuel industry?
Who is saying it's your fault individually?
Okay, all right.
By taxing people, by a carbon tax says it's your fault.
Carbon tax, which goes back into increasing fuel allowance.
We're going to leave it there.
The only tax that's ring fenced to help the poorest.
Okay, we're going to move on because.